The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. So regularly when I come here to give a talk, and I sit like I am just now and see a room full of expectant people looking at me. I find that a little bit odd. And one of the reasons it's odd is that you know, I look out and, you know, or look in or look around and what is there to say? Yeah, you know, I'm pretty content. Are you content? And here we are. And here we are is a very profound statement. Here we are. So here and now is pretty special. One of the things that I have learned, maybe slowly over my years of practice, is how amazingly fresh the present moment is. And I don't think it always was so fresh, because I brought a lot of baggage with me into the present moment. And so we bring, it's interesting to look at, what do you bring with you to the present moment? And we can bring along a lot of the past. Past experiences, which condition and influence how we sit right now. We bring along our conditioning, our values and beliefs that we've acquired over a lifetime. They come along here. We bring along, try another one. Because you tried another, do the hearing system devices work for people?
No.
Oh. Mm. Yeah, we're going to see what's going on. Were they working first? And then suddenly stopped working?
No.
That didn't work at all.
And then worked a little bit, and then it stopped when it switched from that microphone to your microphone.
Ah. So turn off the amplifier all the way.
It's the wrong channel.
It's the wrong channel. Oh. You see, it's not good enough just to be in the present moment. You have to be in the present moment and on the right channel. while we're waiting.
They said the microphone was working.
Yeah, but we'll see. They have to change the channel, they said. So one of my favorite Calvin and Hobbes cartoons is Calvin and Hobbes are having a blast climbing a tree, and they're out on a branch, and Calvin says something like, you know, I don't know what he said exactly, but all you have to do to really enjoy life is to really be in the present moment, fully here for this experience. And Hobbes looks at Calvin and says, yes, but you're supposed to be at school right now. Well, that's kind of funny, right? I'm trying to remember what I said when I... What I want to say is, you know, how fresh and wonderful it is to be just present to what is. Now I'm going to bring, like, baggage, right? Like, look back into the past and what was it I said? And drag it into the present. So here we are, fresh. And one of the things I've learned is, you know, to how wonderful it is to be fresh in this moment. It's a... So here we are, and I'm fond of the little English phrases, the past was, the future will be, and the present is. And the tenses of those words are, you know, important. The past was. And so do we bring it, the past, with us in all kinds of ways? And of course we do. But how do we bring it, and what's our relationship to that? The future will be, and do we haul in the future into the present moment? And if we do, then it's mostly your imagination. It might have some reality, but it's, you know, the future is always an imagination. It's an assumption. And I know that my relationship to the future, one of the ways it changed was when I became aware of that what a very poor track record I had at predicting it. And I would have anxiety and all kinds of ideas and all these plans about what was going to happen. And some of them are necessary to plan and think ahead for sure, but especially when I had anxiety, I noticed that thing would happen, and it would happen so different than the scenario I created in my mind. So then after a while, when I realized how poor I was at predicting the future, and how what a waste of waste of good anxiety I had towards something that never happened, I decided I could let go of my anxiety and a lot of thinking about the future. So the past was, Jack Kornfield has this wonderful teaching that yesterday, what happened to you yesterday, has gone to the same place as the Roman Empire, as the pharaohs of ancient Egypt, and the Buddhist monastics, you know, that lived at the time of the Buddha. You know, all these things in the past, where are they in the past? Is the past kind of crowded with all those past events? Like claustrophobic past? Or is the past huge? You know, what's the size of the past? Is it big enough to hold everything that happened? So the past. And so as I've in these years that I've meditated, one of the things I've learned to do is to let go of my past. Enough so that when I sit, I'm here. And I've also learned to let go of my futures, my planning. The great planning story that I had, I thought, was the one where I was in the monastery, and I had spent a year working in the kitchen, and one of the plum jobs in the monastery was to work as what's called a guest cook. In the summer, there were all these guests who came, big groups of people, and we would make this very good food for them. I considered kind of a prestigious job to be the guest cook. And I knew I was the most qualified person. I'd been in the kitchen for a whole year. And so I spent, I knew it was going to be, it was in the following summer. So from the end of one summer to the following summer, I spent a lot of my free time thinking about menus. And planning, you know, and we would eat in meditation hall in sitting in a posture like this, in a platform kind of like this, except much longer. And you have bowls in front of you, and you would eat in a very ritualized way, choreographed way, and very meditative, very mindful way. It's very nice. And that was a time where I would spend a lot of time thinking about my menus, and the recipes and all that, and how great it was going to be, and how wonderful it would be to be the cook. So I spent, I guess, probably about 8 months doing that. and then the day came, and they have this ritualized way in which they do the assignments. So everyone's in the meditation hall, they're standing around the edges, and they read out your name and your assignment for the summer, and I was going to be the guest cook. Came my assignment, and there was nothing about my assignment about cooking at all. I said, what? And the thing that struck me the biggest was, what was I doing those last 8 months? I could have been meditating, I could have been sitting still, I could have been all that mental time that went by planning menus, thinking about imaginary future. You know, it never happened. What was I doing with my life, living in those thoughts? What are you doing with your life, living in your thoughts? What life are you living in your thoughts? Is that a future life that you're hoping for? Are you still living in the past, your past? Reviewing it? improving on it, arguing with it, regretting it? What kind of future are you living in? Are you living in a hopeful future, in an anxious future, in a dangerous future, in a promising future? How do you see the future that you live in? And then what about the present? Here. And the present is really the only thing that really exists. The past doesn't exist anymore. The future doesn't exist yet. But here, this is real. And the sense of the present moment to me is expansive. The past for me is a little bit small. And the future is even smaller. Even though I guess maybe it's lots of potential. Because it's mostly just in this little two-dimensional world of my thoughts is where I kind of find it. Do you have a different place for finding the past and the future? Besides your thoughts and your images and stuff? But the present moment is not restricted or limited by the thoughts that I imagine or I remember. And so the present moment when I it feels boundless. And in a very nice way, there's a sense, the visceral felt sense I have of being, and I'm really here in the present, is it's kind of like being, on the edge of or high up in the mountaintop. And there's this vast open expanse in front of us, some great vista. That's how the present moment feels. Wow, just all full of potential, possibility. Just full and spacious, lots of space. Very open. So what is your present moment like? What does it feel like for you? Is it something that feels alive and something that feels meaningful or three-dimensional? Or is the present moment a place that is... unfortunate transit zone on the way to the future. In transit. A life in transit. Some people live their whole life in transit. Because the present moment is, not the place to arrive at. It's the way to get someplace where you're trying to get to. So, here. So one of the tasks of mindfulness practice is to become acutely aware of what you do with the past and the future, how it lives for you in the present, to be able to watch your mind enough that you know what kind of thoughts and images you're being pulled away in. Are most of your thoughts about the future? Are most of them about the past? Are most of them have to do with fantasy? It has nothing to do with past or future? Or are most of them the thoughts about the present moment? Is it a present moment which is here and now? Or is it a present moment which is here and there? No, and now and here. Now and there. Now and there. It's certainly now, but it's, you're thinking about, someone else somewhere else. So, what goes on? How does your mind work? How does your thinking work? What's your relationship to those thoughts in the past and the future you have? And most importantly, what's the cost of spending a lot of time thinking about the past? What are the limitations of it? What are the costs of spending a lot of time in the future, and what are the limitations of that? We have to think about the past some, and we have to think about the future some, and some of those thinking is great. Some of it's quite nice. It's a nice thing. But are you aware of the limitations of spending a lot of time in the past and the future? To what degree does it limit you and narrow your world? To what degree does it kind of put blinders on so you don't really sense and feel the fullness of who you are right here and now? I've spent time thinking about the future and being anxious about it, and I didn't really appreciate the present moment. So there was blinders where I couldn't really appreciate what was here and now. I've been involved in lost in the past, and some conflict I had with someone, And being caught in that conflict, I couldn't see the full picture of what was going on in the present. I couldn't feel the fullness of what was going on for me because I was swirling around in the thoughts. I couldn't see the fullness of the other person I was in conflict with because all my thoughts about how the conversation happened before interferes with being here now. So to learn what your mind does, learn the limitations of it, and then learn to be able to let go. Not let go because necessarily it's bad to do all these kinds of thinking, but learn to let go so we're not limited by it. And then begin to have a fresh eyes, be able to see here, to be content, and really look around here. And what do you see? What's your relationship to the here and now, to the present moment? And that's another thing to explore in this practice, to really understand what is your relationship to it. Because you probably have some default relationship to it, underlying basic attitude towards the present moment. The present moment, is a drag. Or the present moment is boring. Or the present moment is not really where life is found. For a long time, I kind of had the underlying attitude that no matter what happened to me, whatever was going on, it was never good enough. Not this. It can't be good enough. And related to that was the idea that the grass is greener somewhere else. So whatever I'm doing, it's not quite the best. There's not quite the right version of whatever. And so I was never settled on the present moment. It's like always looking ahead or looking beyond. So what is your attitude to? Do you have a default attitude? Some people it's fear. There's a lot of anxiety in our society. Some people, it's greed, wanting. In the present moment, it's just a vehicle to get something and lacking the head. What is, do you have an is the present moment just an instrument for getting what you want? So you're kind of using whatever's going on in the present to kind of move on to get something. What is your attitude about the present? Because without understanding what your attitude and relationship is to the present, you're not going to be able to let go of that attitude and that relationship. And one of the great things is to begin to let go enough that you're present without an attitude. It isn't, now, that could seem kind of boring in itself. That can seem like, how could that be any value? But there's a freshness to it. There's an aliveness to it. There's not a limitation. There's not a constriction to this here. And the sense of making space for just being here and our aliveness and the situation we're in is a great thing. Generally, when I get up in the morning, or generally, especially when I after I meditate, it doesn't occur to me that there are any problems. Does that make me weird? But the idea of there's problems, certainly have problems, I can give you my litany if you'd like. I have practical thing, all kinds of things. I have teenagers. But coming out of meditation, I don't have any problems because my mind is not engaged or involved in constructing them or thinking about them or having them. And it's a great feeling to have this freshness and presence and contentment just here. Here we are. And then to run into the circumstances of our lives, to meet them not as if they're a problem, a pre-decided problem, but to just to be there and open, relaxed, available, present, and to figure out what needed in that moment, what's the response of that moment. And I think that's one of the gifts that meditation can give, is this ability to learn to let go of the thoughts, let go of the past, let go of the future, let go of the psychological needs that we constantly swirling and involved in, and have a fresh mind, an open mind, a relaxed mind, what some people called a beginner's mind, just ready to see and be fresh and new and beginner and whatever goes on, and just here. In Buddhism, there's a lot of, historically at least, a lot of emphasis on developing your meditation practice to get something, to get concentrated, to get to insight, to get certain levels of enlightenment and all that. And and the kind of paradox is that in order to follow a path to those kinds of attainments, you have to learn not to be caught up in the world of thoughts about the future, what you're going to get and what you're going to acquire, what's going to happen in your practice. Get caught up in thoughts of your identity and, you know, you're going to be the most enlightened person on your block and this will be great. Or caught up in thoughts that you're not making enough progress, or it should be different, or you're not making any progress, or you're going backwards. You have to kind of, the path is learning to not get caught by any of those thoughts, let go. And then there's a freshness that happens that, and a freedom and ease begins happening where it doesn't really matter if you get enlightened, if you become one of those enlightened people. Because that's not how you see the world. You're not seeing the world through that lens. You're not seeing the world through the lens of needing something, because the lens of needing something is a narrow lens. And the wide lens is just to be seeing, just to be here and present. I love the experience of the Bay Area when there's absolutely no smog. Partly it's nice, you know, the air is fresh and you have, you know, I don't always realize there's mountains across the bay. But they really, you know, suddenly you see them and they're crystal clear and the Fremont Hills over there and they seem so close. I kind of, even though I might intellectually know there's mountains over there, I don't realize how close they are until the air is clear. But what I like about when there's no smog at all, is that clarity, that openness. And for me, it's akin to the clear mind. The mind has no smog in it. The mind has no thing that obscures it. So it's just a sense of openness and fullness. And it's so satisfying that it does, and anything that you start feeling like I need, I want, the past, the future, just feels like it's not necessary to have that go into the mind. Not necessary. Just, you know, leave it alone. Why make the air smoggy again when it's so clear? Why make the mind smoggy? Why make the mind contracted again when it's relaxed and open? And we have some things that happen to us that comes with a lot of authority, like this is so important. You know, this needs to be taken care of, this needs. And, you know, it's fine to take care of things, it's important to take care of things, but do we have to lose the clarity of our mind, the ease of our minds because of it? I've had physical challenges, physical pain and health concerns and things like that. And I can watch the authority, like, oh, this is important. Like, I got to get involved in this. And I've done this practice long enough that I could watch and say, I don't have to do that. I don't have to, you know, sooner or later I have to address these things. But I don't have to let my mind become involved in those thoughts or caught in those thoughts. I can just hold everything, let everything just be in this open, wide, clear mind. Just there. I don't have to pick it up. I don't have to get involved. Notions of success and failure. It's a big room of people looking at me. And I'm supposed to be giving a talk. And maybe I'm failing. Maybe some of you think I'm failing. Or maybe I'm succeeding. Oh, wow. So, you know, certainly I should take that into account. And if I'm really completely not helping you in any kind of way with this, maybe I should recalibrate. Because I want to be supportive. But the idea of success and failure just seems like to be a successful person or a failing person, it just seems like it's not very interesting to kind of pick that up in my mind and have it swirl around. And it just kind of pales. It pales in importance or value, pales in preciousness compared to an easeful, relaxed, open mind. So learning to let go in meditation, learning to see clearly what's there, learning to be easeful about what's there, not to be judgmental, not to be critical, not to be upset, not to get entangled with what you see in your mind, your thinking mind, your feeling mind, whatever. And then learning to begin to maybe let go of it or see it so clearly that the clarity or the ease of the mind begins to stand out until such a time that the reference point, a very important reference point for your life, is a sense of peace or ease or clarity, openness, with just being here. You really feel like you're here with this clarity and peace. And then have that as a reference point to begin questioning why you lose it. What do you do that causes you to lose that clarity or that peace? How important is it? Whatever you're thinking about or involved in, is it important enough to lose the peace and clarity? Is it important enough to lose your ease? And what are the important things? What is so important you've got to lose your ease? And what this implies, what I'm saying, is that you have a choice. But to come to a point where you see that one place of choice takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of ability to let go, to be present, and to see. But it's a magic point to come to this place. Oh, I don't have to pick that up. I don't have to be involved in that. That limits me. That's not so nice. It's not so good. Rather than spending 8 months thinking about menus, maybe you could be aware. Maybe I could have been aware that this, you know, has actually limited my life. You know, after a month or a week or a day or a few minutes would have been good. Menus are fine to think about, but within limits. So it's a bit not to pick up. At some point, there becomes a tipping point where the value of ease or peace or clarity or freshness in the present moment, it has such a clear, visceral, immediate sense of value that you're not so readily going automatically to anxiety, fear, desire, greed, past, future. It's just because you're going, this is good. This is good. Here it is. Here. And there's a kind of then contentment with the present. Kind of happiness in the present, regardless of what the present is. And when there's generally, if there's unhappiness with the present moment, you want to look and see, are you overlaying the present moment with value, with ideas, with past, with future? Are you bringing into the present moment all kinds of assumptions and desires and wishes and fears, which don't have to be there? some of the impatience we have, the boredom we have, the fear we have is extra. So, here we are. Here you are. What's your experience of being here and now? Now. Where is the center of your attention? How fully are you present with your body, with your mind, your heart? If awareness is something that radiates from you, what comes to you? What is your experience of yourself? I think one of the central purposes of the teaching the Dharma, of giving Dharma talks, is in fact to put a mirror to you so that you see yourself better. And what better place to see yourself, to know what's happening for you, but right here. And in terms of success and failure, some of the very best Dharma talks, underline the word Dharma, the best Dharma talks that are most effective are the worst ones. Because if you're a good Dharma student, they may be the best mirror where you get to see what goes on in you, what happens in you, what expectations you had for the talk, what your hopes were, what, you know, all the stuff that you bring. And when it's, you know, if it's a really compelling and inspiring Dharma talk, you're swept along and you're emotionally inspired and all this wonderful stuff and you leave, wow, that was great. You might not learn anything about yourself. It might have actually distracted you from yourself. But if it's boring, or other ways, conventionally awful talk, maybe you're forced. The best option you have then is to really check and see what's going on for you, and how is your experience of being there for the talk colored by your expectations, your desires, your all kinds of extra baggage you bring along, and you need to have all that baggage. And maybe just sit there with and be completely happy and relaxed, content, open. Just listening to someone else blab. But find your peace here. Or you're only going to find your deep peace with the present moment when you meditate. And as soon as there's someone talking, then there's a whole other thing that goes on. So the idea of the talk is to be a mirror. So I hope that this emphasis today of asking, how are you right now? What's going on for you? What's your experience now? What baggage, values, thoughts, reactions do you have that get in the way of you just being at peace this moment? Here, now. Do you take some responsibility for how deep, how peace and settled you are now? Or do you tie your peace and settledness to what goes on around you or what goes on in the talk? So here we are. The image, one image of freedom in Buddhism is a person who's walking along carrying a very big bag over the shoulder. The person struggling along and then comes across someone and they talk a little bit on the road, and the person with the big bag says, oh, that's such a big struggle to carry this bag. And the other person says, it's okay if you want to put the bag down. Really? So may you put your baggage down. may you put that, from time to time, really put down what you're carrying and just be here, simple way. So thank you for the being such good listeners and being part of this, and thank you for sitting together this morning. And I wish you a wonderful week, and I hope that you discover that the present moment is a wonderful place to be. And if you're not in the present moment, I hope that you discover it's wonderful to be mindful of where you are, if not the present. Thank you.